You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Krem. Today we're fireside chatting with Nelson Chu, co-founder and CEO of Percent, and Michael Kavanaugh, founder and CEO of Regimen Inc. Both of them have very interesting perspectives on the do's and don'ts of raising money via platforms. If you're looking for a streamlined way to access investors, you are going to enjoy this chat. All right. Welcome one and all. I hope you had a good little breakout session there while everybody was trickling in. For the people who haven't been here before, just a little bit on what to expect. We do this every week. This is actually our 74th one of these. So we've been doing it for quite some time, but we're going to ever so briefly talk about Diffuse Tap and then Diffuse what we're up to. Then we're going to have a fireside chat with the speakers of the day, Mike Kavanaugh and Nelson Chu. And then we're going to do two more rounds of breakout rooms like you just experienced, a little bit longer and a little bit more directed to give you a chance to network with other audience members. Why? Because that's what Diffuse is. First and foremost, it is a networking event. About 45 minutes of our hour together is meeting people and letting serendipity do its thing. The other 15 minutes, we do try to have a speaker or speakers online to talk about something that our audience will find interesting. It's largely alternative investors or supporters, so it's pretty much all alternative investing strategies. And then don't forget, we do have kind of as a grassroots movement that we're subtly encouraging. We have in-person versions of this, which is more sitting in a bar, having a few drinks and meeting people. But the next one is on November, this is 18th in LA, hosted by Mr. Craig Isaacson. So if you're going to be in that neck of the woods, Craig, I see you. So he is the host. You might see meet him today. What is Diffuse? We are an alternative fund incubator. So we scour the world quite literally to try to find high alpha, more esoteric investment strategies. And then we turn them into funds. That's kind of our jam. Two of those is one is MaxFi, which some of you saw a lot more about on Friday, where we are yield farming, maybe is the easiest way to describe it, while maintaining a digital asset cryptocurrency market long exposure. StableFi is similar yield farming, but we're using a market neutral manner. So that means that the exposure to the wild volatility of crypto is effectively zero. So very different. Now that's us done. So we're gonna start talking about our speakers. I'm terrible with introductions, so I'll just say they are Nelson Chu and Mike Kavanaugh. Maybe I'll hand it over to you, Nelson, first to give just a quick high level on yourself and Percent.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks everyone for joining this little fireside chat. My name is Nelson Chu, founder and CEO of Percent. We are a global infrastructure solution for credit markets, specifically private credit. And so we essentially create all the tools and the data you need to be able to do a transaction from start to finish, whether it's sourcing a deal, structuring a deal, syndicating a deal, or surveillancing a deal. We kind of cover all of it. And so we've done about close to $700 million in total volume so far in what we'd like to call our own little public beta. But a lot of work has been done and going on to be able to actually open this market up in its entirety by the end of this year. And so it's a very exciting time to be part of this company. And I can definitely talk about that as we kind of dive into the question.
That was, wow, short and sweet. I absolutely loved that. That was efficient. Not yet your first rodeo. Percent, for some of you, might know it as their former name, which was Cadence. At least that's how I first ran into them. Mike Kavanaugh, you are up, and I think another one of our few repeat speakers. So welcome.
Thank you, Kenny. Hello, everybody. Thanks for taking the time. My name is Mike Kavanaugh. I'm the founder of Regimen. Regimen is a financial services ecosystem for what we call the Money 3.0 movement. Amongst our family of companies is Regimen Securities, which is a FINRA-approved broker-dealer. We utilize a technology platform that allows us to address the operational inefficiencies in a private capital raise. We white label the platform. It's built by a company here in Chicago called Wealthlock. We're an investor in that company, and they've been a great partner for us to utilize the platform to raise money in the private markets.
Beautiful. And I'll just hop right in with the first question. We'll definitely feel free to post anything and everything into the chat if you have your own questions, but maybe we kick off with Nelson. How did you actually get into the game of fundraising via a platform? How did you come up with this idea, and what drove the development of the platform?
Yeah, I would say accidentally, probably the best way to put it. So I actually was in finance for a very little bit for the kind of start of my career. I was at Merrill Lynch for the last 2 months of Merrill Lynch's very sad life. became Bank of America, and then joined BlackRock after that. So it was a whopping 2.5 years, I think, since I was in that space before I decided I will never work in finance ever again, which is obviously very famous last words because I am knee deep in finance at this point. But after that, I thought, you know, 2012, 2013, good time to start a company in New York. New York tech scene is starting to get really, really hot. And we figured, yeah, might as well. How hard could it be to start a company? I realized very quickly it's actually very hard to start a company, and blew up the company within 6 months. Was broke, and so when you're broke, you become a consultant. And so I became, my startup became a consultancy that helped other founders build from the ground up. And so for 7 years, I basically spent dedicated to helping these founders do product, marketing, branding, engineering to get companies off the ground, and saw a lot of really interesting companies along the way. One of them, which was in the private credit space. For those who don't know, private credit is all things small business lending, consumer lending, things like that. Essentially, all of these non-bank lenders who have emerged post the global financial crisis, have really stepped in and solved what the banks couldn't do anymore. And these guys have been fantastic in growing, but you know, they oftentimes need help on the other side to raise the debt capital to be able to fund these loans. And so with a client that we had that was in that private credit space, we started to see the opportunity for doing something different than other crowdfunding platforms out there at the time. There was a need for super high minimums. It was like $25,000, which is not really approachable for the average person. There was super long lockups of like couple of like 5 years, which we thought was crazy given the assets themselves were pretty short duration. And the yield was pretty good, 9 to 16%. And so we thought we could build a better mousetrap than what was out there and make it extremely attractive to anyone and everyone as a result of that. And the evolution of the company to what I talked about earlier in my introduction was just natural from just seeing the pain points in the industry and recognizing it's more than just a crowdfunding platform. It is a real technology pain point that we need to solve for here. And that's how we've evolved accordingly. So yeah, accidentally having a client, and then here we are today.
Cool. Yeah, very similar. Nelson's story is very similar. I felt like almost like I got forced into the money 3.0 movement that we're taking part in here at Regiment. I had a small consultancy firm called FinTech Ranger. We recently changed the name to Regiment. Regiment is a group of Rangers. So we've gotten out of FinTech. We've stayed in FinTech. We've expanded outside of FinTech into real estate, private equity, venture capital, as far as the services we offer. But similar, you know, we saw in like 2016, 2017, just cash starting to stockpile, and it was flowing into traditional capital markets at the slowest pace ever. And it kind of reminded me of a movement I participated in a couple different movements in the past. One was the algorithmic HFT trading in the futures market in the early 2000s. I was a pit trader at the Board of Trade, where it was, you know, 6 bid at 7, and that top of market went into HFT algos connected directly to the exchanges, and that all went away. So having seen technology integrate into financial services new, with this blockchain crypto movement coming into play, the fact that more money was sitting in cash because there's a global, void in yield in traditional fixed income markets, the stock market's at all time highs, making less and less sense to the sophisticated investors. So as cash started stockpiling, we started seeing that more and more people were looking to alternatives, getting their money into asset classes that were still immature, but they didn't have any other place to go in the mature, like traditional capital markets. So that's really what got us into building the ecosystem for the money 3.0 movement. Was the market forces were just prime, begging for groups like ours to step up and educate and then evaluate and execute to invest in the alternative market space.
That's great. And going back to your comment about the floor traders moving into high frequency trading, sorry about that.
No, it's all good. it was a great lesson. You know, I learned so much from it, from the fact that, you know, I was maybe one of the first industries to ever be completely replaced by robots. If you think that your industry can't be replaced by robots, I would kindly disagree with anybody out there. So it's actually a great lesson to learn and applied to the current movement with the technology behind cryptocurrencies and blockchain. It's pretty fascinating.
Gotcha. And obviously streamlining is a key element. Nelson, back over to you. So a lot of the audience here are going to be alternative investor sponsors or allocators. So it's kind of both sides of the marketplace for you. When they're looking from both those lenses, potentially, or pick one, at the landscape, what type of platforms are out there? What distinguishes, what are the kind of the larger buckets that you can chuck them into? Just what is the state of play?
Yeah, I think there is no shortage of opportunities to invest in alts today. I think there's the explosion of new asset classes. All those things have become pretty fascinating, honestly, because it all happened. I feel like it accelerated dramatically through COVID. There's collectibles now. There's obviously crypto. There's NFTs. There's debt. There's obviously a lot of equities. Everyone became an option trader during COVID. Like it's just kind of insane, right? And so it's a big question of really like, where do you put your money? And I think, you know, while I don't recommend all of the money on percent, I'd love that, but you know, it's just not a really sound strategy. I think there's other ways. You got to earn other returns and alpha in other places. What differentiates percent is really in our ability to provide transparency into underlying asset performance. And so the private credit market specifically, if you were to invest in like LendingClub, Yield Street, you know, all those different places in the past, you're not really all that sure how well these assets that you've invested in are performing. It's just not part and parcel of what they do. And we saw, in addition to the lower minimums, shorter durations, comparable yield, we felt that better transparency was critical to what we do and what investors should have access to. And it's the reason why it's driven a lot of our technology development around creating a standardized, normalized data set that any investor can use to compare how one deal is different from another. And then after they make an investment, how it's performing relative to other investments. They actually have all that available to them. And so if it's something that, if that is valuable to you, the ability to monitor performance, which I hope it is, and generally if you're being a good asset allocator, that's fairly important, and the ability to market the market in terms of how it's actually doing, then we do stand out above the pack on that. And it is absolutely core to what we do. Transparency is the name of the game, and it only affords and creates a more efficient marketplace as a result.
Makes a lot of sense. We work with a lot of kind of marketplaces or exchanges, and the biggest inefficiency we find is just information asymmetry, right? The owners own a lot more than the buyers or the would-be buyers. So how do you overcome that? And that transparency is a big key. Cavi, coming from the other angle, which is obviously Nelson's actually doing the platform, you're white labeling one and more using it to do the capital raise. Same question to you. What did you see as the state of play? What were the buckets when you were deciding who to partner with on the platform side of things?
Yeah, for us, you know, transparency is definitely, you know, to Nelson's point, the number one thing. There's always that factor of like garbage in, garbage out. Like, where are you getting the data to provide the information to the investor? That's the hardest challenge in private markets is getting that information. So we do our own due diligence to come up with the reporting on that. I know that wasn't your question. I just wanted to get that in. So for us making the decision on what platform that we were going to white label, you know, we looked at everything in the marketplace, and it really truly came down to partnerships. So we chose Wealthblock. They've got a great platform. Their technology's amazing. We just think we caught them at the right time. They were just starting. We were just starting. We actually were their pilot customer, and they were really flexible with us in working to come up with a platform solution for us to execute on. And my experience in capital markets, fintech in the last 25 years, I really think that's the biggest point when you're starting out is really creating and crafting the best partnerships where there's alignment with your partner. And we had that alignment with Wealthblock being their first customer. They're great technologists. Their capital markets experience was a little less, so we helped them form an advisory board with some capital market experts. So really in fintech, the partnerships at the early stage and keeping those partnerships aligned is the key. And we found that with Wealthblock more so than anyone else in the marketplace at the time. And, you know, most of that just has to do with we were lucky enough to find them when they were just starting and talk through the conversations to really focus on the partnership. And that expanded for them through COVID. And, you know, now they're 70 plus clients in their client base. So it's been really cool watching them grow since the beginning.
One of the things that you kind of mentioned there was different asset classes, and a bunch of the questions in the chat have been around what asset classes certain platforms support and why not. Maybe we pick up with Nelson. VC, why is it that maybe Percent has chosen to not venture into venture and Regiment as well? How did you pick the verticals that you're in? But maybe kick off with Nelson. How did you pick your asset classes?
It's a great question. I think from our perspective, we saw really the gap in the market in providing a truly quality private debt product. So all things tied to, again, small business lending, consumer loans, factor receivables, equipment leasing, litigation finance. Everyone else that was doing it out there was just really not that great. The big gap from our perspective was on that transparency side of the equation. If I don't know how this investment is doing and you have a 5-year lockup on my investments, that's a pretty tricky situation to navigate. And the interest payments, the principal pay downs are just extremely uneven. It kind of just happens when it happens. We thought there's a lot of value to be done and to be doing it in a much more predictable way, where it's like, if it's performing, interest pays out on this date, principal pays out on that date, and you know exactly how it's doing and how it's performing by watching and looking at those surveillance reports. So we have not veered into VC and startup crowdfunding or equity or fundraising because it's just a very crowded space. You have the angel lists of the world, you have the republics of the world, you have kind of anything and everything that's all in and focused on VC and startups. And especially when it comes to those types of startups, it's actually very difficult to stay true to our model of providing transparency. Any investor who's in that type of investment likely doesn't have information rights around how the company is doing. And so you're kind of just investing in it and then hoping that it comes back. And with the usual model of, I would say probably 95% of companies go nowhere in terms of like you write it down to zero. 4% will probably return you the money that you put into it. And then the 1%, which is like an absolute moonshot, does really well. That is not really something that we feel we can actually be competitive against, nor does it stay true to the model of like, the actual monitoring of the performance of the company. So we just have veered away from VC because everyone else is doing it. And it's difficult for us to get what we want out of the companies in order to be on the platform. We have looked at other stuff. I think there's some questions about crypto as well. We're not actually focused on crypto much, if at all. We do have crypto companies on the platform, but they're more lenders, right? So we are focused again on private credit, which effectively means lending. And to that end, there are no shortage of crypto lenders who also need capital on the other side to be able to support what they need to do on the actual lending front. And so we have a handful of them on the platform, definitely not averse to it. And we actually like them quite a bit because it's theoretically a fully liquid asset that can get margin calls on the way down, in which case there should be very little chance of default. Still, theoretical, things can go south for multiple different reasons, but conceptually it is a very good asset class.
Abby, anything to add to that?
Yeah, we're kind of looking at all different asset classes, and it comes from the demand of the client. So what we really need to focus on is cycle-tested managers. If they're in a new asset class, which you could argue pretty much every manager in the crypto space is a new manager, right? You can't say, how did you perform in 2008? Because crypto wasn't around in 2008. So it's really hard to find who the best managers are in the new venture capital, new real estate, new private equity. So really, to overcome that, we have to look at cycle-tested managers like that focus on risk management, whatever asset class they're in. If they're in VC, in crypto, it's new. There's no data points. How did you perform in 2008? Or how did you perform the last time there was a global pandemic that shut down 88% of the globe? We're all kind of starting at ground zero there. Like, nobody has a reference point. Ray Dalio can't tell you what he did the last time the globe shut down because of a pandemic. So we really look at the cycle testing and risk management parameters of a cycle tested manager in any asset class. And we're seeing great stuff in venture capital, as well as real estate, as well as private credit.
Great. Appreciate it. Nelson, back to you. This is more of a nuts and bolts for the users of your platform. And we're breaking our rule and going over past the half hour. You've got a customer, a sponsor, they're putting something on your platform. What are some common misconceptions? They put it on there and then the money just rolls in. What does that actually look like? What's the reality of that workflow and what's necessary and what most people don't realize?
Sure. And so just so we're clear, since we do have quite a number of customers, three customers technically, which again, quite scary for most VCs, but we'd like to think it keeps things interesting. The customer is the investor who's putting money to work, looking for a return on and yield, or the customer, the lender who's looking for debt capital. Which one are you referencing here?
In this, I was thinking more on the sponsor side, because I think that's more of the audience, the people that are actually putting a deal on the platform to raise money.
Got it. Yeah, I think, look, the name of the game for all of this is usually around diversification. These are individual investments into specific lenders themselves, right? So the entire portfolio of loans. There's a lot that can go right and a lot that can go wrong in that instance. And when something does go wrong, you have to go through a traditional workout process, which the credit funds and the asset managers of the world are very familiar with because of just certain freak accidents that may happen, COVID being one of them, right? We're pretty proud of our default rate. It's around 2%, all things considered, but still, it's 2% more than we'd like it to be, right? So we've navigated defaults as best that we could throughout this process. But if you are diversified, if you have, you know, let's say for easy math, $100,000 to invest, if you put $10,000 into 10 different investments, then you'll probably do pretty well in the grand scheme of things. And you'll be able to capitalize on the return profiles that we have here. Our return profiles range from as high as 20% to as low as 8.5%. And it is commensurate with the risk that goes along with that. For something that's super high, like 20%, it's likely because it is subordinated in some sort of way to something else that's more senior. So you kind of come to the territory. For something that's 8.5%, then that's going to be that something that is a asset class that tends to be one that performs because there is collateral behind it, specifically around like an invoice or factoring or something like that. So it really just comes down to the appetite of the investor who's looking for a return. But we are working on products that are going to provide diversification for the investor from the get-go without having them to worry about it themselves, which we are very excited about. And that should alleviate some of this, you know, where should I put it into like a quarter into emerging markets, 75% into domestic, and like 50-50 into like small business versus consumer. Like that's a lot to worry about. We're trying to get out of their hands to just make it a lot easier.
Gotcha. And you preempted Winkler's question around yield. So appreciate that.
Yeah.
Cavi, over to you. So your clients come to you, you get them on your Wealth Blog white label solution. What are some misconceptions around them doing the raising platform versus direct? Is it fly by wire? Is it more involved? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And there's other solutions in the marketplace. It kind of comes down to the fact that the platform helps with the operational inefficiencies. It's not the deal closer for an investor to decide they want to invest in it. Like, you know, they don't come to our website and go, wow, this is such a great platform. I like how easy it is to use. It is easy to use on the operational side, but it's not the deal sealer as far as getting people interested into investing. Really, showcasing high quality deals by cycle tested managers is what the attraction is. And if anything, the platform is there to help with the inefficiencies. It's not the deal sealer, so to speak.
Gotcha. Makes sense. A friend of Diffuse regularly says it's financial services. Nothing is ever bought. It's only ever sold. So no matter how much you put it on a platform to hope for the best, there's still a conversation probably at the end of the day. But with that, we are past the half hour. So we need to get into breakout rooms, couple housekeeping items. It's networking, not pitching. Please be respectful of that. Be kind to one another. And importantly, if you do find somebody that you want to work with or you think there might be something there you can help each other out with, swap details then and there is the cleanest and easiest because we don't do a full participant list. But we do also have a Telegram group, which Isla has already put into the chat. So feel free to join us and ask for something. Ms. Isla, do you want to talk about the breakout rooms?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll pop you into rooms. You'll be about 4 to 5 people in each room. And the topic to get started with is kind of links up with Kenny's last comment there. Is platform fundraising going to replace broker dealers? What happened to legwork? Is that still needed, or will it eventually be completely automated? I will pop it into the breakout room and we'll see you back here in 10 minutes.
Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully you had a good chat. We're going to do another couple quick questions to Nelson and Mike. Well, really one, mostly to give Isla a chance to reshuffle breakout rooms. But Nelson, we always do the same question. What are trends? Platform fundraising, what are some of the interesting things you see going on in the space right now? Things ideally people aren't necessarily aware of, or you have to be in the game, as it were, to even recognize.
Yeah, I think I might take a counterpoint to some of this. I would say the average for around crowdfunding and, you know, alternative investing and things like that, I would say that there's actually a cap on how many investors would ultimately be investing in alts for the long term. I think just the sheer number of platforms that are out there that will not perform in the grand scheme of things will make people turn sour on alts as a whole and go back to things that are more liquid, that they can get in and out of easier, that they can see and track better and monitor better. So there's been obviously a groundswell of VC money flowing into these like platforms. I think there will be a reckoning, and only a few will survive coming out of that, just because it's, you know, investors get spooked, they're done with the platform, and they'll either move on to something else or just be done altogether. And it's, you know, it is also a big reason why we've shifted from beyond just the platform that we have to really providing infrastructure to be able to, you know, actually support the ecosystem and not the capital deployment specifically. It's just a shift in thesis for us at the very least.
Totally makes sense. Same question to you, Cavi. Interesting trends. What do you see in your space?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with Nelson. I think there's going to be just a ton of fallout in the crowdfunding space. It's crazy because we're so heavily regulated as broker dealer. It's like if you sneeze, you have to report it to FINRA and, you know, every detail. But these crowdfunding portals are almost like the Wild West, and you can put up, you know, like, hey, this new technology where you can put a chip in your eyeball to open doors, you know, throw $100 in it. It could be the next, you know, unicorn, whatever. And it's like, they can get away with saying all of that stuff. And, you know, I think Silicon Valley is a little bit different than, you know, the Midwest as far as like fintech goes. It feels a little more marketing centric than risk management centric. So I think there will be a lot of fallout in the lower you go down on the food chain in the crowdfunding portals. And there will be some fallout, but I don't think we're going to go back. I think there will be some winners in the space, the platform space, as far as bringing investors together, where the intermediaries collaborate on deals and sharing opportunities. I think there will be some winners, and I think that people will gravitate towards that. We're not going back. You know, there was a pipe dream 20 years ago when they pulled us out of the trading pits when Kenny hooked up his machines and started the algo revolution. There was a handful of people that are like, we're going to come back. You know, it's going to come back. It's not coming back. Like the platforms and the making the private markets transparent, you know, we're probably at the same point, you know, when the stock market became, you know, there's got to be a better way than doing Quotron machines. We're not using Quotrons anymore, but we're still trading in the stock market. And I don't think we're going back to, well, sending PDFs via email with numbered PPMs used to be a great system. Let's go back to that. It's not going back to that. I think there'll be some winners that come out of the platform game, and those winners will get the business, and they'll continue to make things more transparent. Like Nelson's platform is doing, like he mentioned, there'll be more data, more analytics, and more serious risk-minded platforms that are looking for cycle-tested managers for their clients to get into. And you know, the private markets will look more like the stock exchange does in 2000 in the next 5 years.
Love it. Onwards and upwards, forward, 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 right? Ayla, do you want to do another round of breakout rooms?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll pop you into rooms right now. And the question is, what are your fears and the opportunities that you see with regards to allocating your own capital via these platforms? If you've done it before, feel free to share why. If you haven't, then feel free to share why not. I'm popping into rooms right now, and we'll see you back here in probably about 8 minutes or so.
So, love it. Giant returns in gaming. We're back to alliteration. I love it, Ayla. We're gonna talk about gaming investors. There's a lot going on in that space, especially if you expand it to include the NFT world. It's absolutely fascinating at the moment. So join us next week, same time, same place. And then November 10th, we have DeFi to the Moon. So definitely show up for that as well. It should be an interesting conversation. You'll see that in your inbox. And as always, We do have a Telegram group. It's great for just asking the audience for something. Introduce yourself a smidge. And I don't know, if you're looking for introductions to XYZ type of person, I'm sure that they can help you out. And we also put notifications about things we're up to in there as well. Ayla, any other talking points?
No, that's it. Thanks so much to Nelson and to Mike for sharing your insights today. And if you want to get in touch with either party, I think both of them might be in the Telegram group. Otherwise, feel free to ping me and I'm happy to make an introduction.
And thank you everybody for showing up, and nice to see a lot of familiar faces. And we will see you next week, same time.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Diffuse Tap with Ayla Krem and Kenny Estes. If you enjoyed these conversations, join us for the live version every Wednesday-ish at 10 a.m. Central. In addition to the Fireside Chat, the live event features three rounds of networking in small groups with alternative fund GPs, LPs, and supporters from around the world. Log on to www.diffusefunds.com to register yourself now.